The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
We are coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio and streaming on Facebook Live. Welcome to the weekend. We have quite the Friday extravaganza planned for you. Seahawks head coach Pete Carroll is going to join us at 12:30 this afternoon and preview the huge game coming up on Sunday against the San Francisco 49ers, see if the Seahawks can keep up the momentum, the role that they hope will take them into the playoffs. We got lots of exclusive stuff for you. Let's get right into the Big Lead.
The Big Lead, Dory Monson Show exclusive.
And I'm telling you, I found myself in the midst of a little bit of a worldwide maelstrom last night.
Welcome to the jungle.
I told you yesterday, Ursula, that when I was talking about the plastic bag ban, that Duff McKagan, who's with Guns N' Roses, he reached out to me on Twitter. And he,
well, because you tweeted something about it, too.
Yeah, I tweeted that I think it's silly for Washington State to do a plastic bag ban because it does nothing for the planet, in my view. And I explained that 95% of the plastic in our oceans comes from just 10 rivers worldwide, 8 in Asia and 2 in Africa, that the United States actually contributes very, very little. And beyond that, that Washington State is a tiny, tiny percentage of what America contributes. So it just struck me as an exercise in futility to do a statewide plastic bag ban. So that's what I tweeted out yesterday. And then while we were on the show yesterday, Duff McKagan from Guns N' Roses, he sent out a tweet completely disagreeing with me. And what he said, here's what he wrote on Twitter. I disagree, Dory. I studied this exact topic at Seattle U. I know the aspirin effect you are talking about, and I get it, but and I don't know what that is, to be honest. But
or you just put these little fixes on things, it doesn't solve a problem.
Oh, okay.
Something
all
like
right.
that.
Okay, I know the aspirin effect you are talking about, and I get it, but lessening plastic anywhere is a good thing. Also, not sure where you got your stat. So Nicole reached out to Duff during the show and said, hey, come on and talk about it. He goes, I can't. I'm in Africa. And
see, now you weren't the only one who was staying up at night.
Right.
He couldn't fall asleep
well,
either.
He had just gotten off stage. I mean, they had just finished a show in Africa. And what he was texting to Nicole was that he was all amped up from the Guns N' Roses show they had just finished.
Well, he kept texting me, and I kept saying, yeah, okay, great. Let us know when you can talk about it. We understand, whatever. I just kept, and he kept saying, seriously, Nicole, I want to make sure Dory gets this message. And I was like, no, I get it. I'll give him the message definitely.
As if you were just going to ignore it.
And then he kept going, and then he ended up sending me a, sorry, I'm a bit amped up. I just got off stage. Sorry if I came across abrasive.
Okay, how sweet
so
is he?
Cute.
Right.
Yes.
And so I just, you know, first of all, the whole thing just amuses me that the first thing Duff does, they're the biggest touring act in the world. They sell more tickets than any band in the world the last couple of years on their tours. And it just amused me and delights me no end that that's what he does the first thing when he comes
off.
That's
awesome.
So anyway, then I tweeted last night, I just said, love the feedback from my friend Duff McKagan. We disagree on this one, but when your Guns N' Roses tour is over, let's get together on issues that'll bring together this region we grew up in and love and fix this damn place. Now get back from Africa so we can get to work. And then I wake up at 4 a.m. And I, you know, first thing I do is I check my phone bedside. And there's a tweet from Duff at 4 a.m. And he wrote, and this is what I want to talk about. This is what I want to get into here. He wrote, just to be clear, for anyone thinking I railed against Dory Monson as a person would be wrong. I enjoy his show and Dory at a personal level. I only disagreed with a take he had, which is okay. He can do the same to me. And guess what? We'd still remain friends and respect each other. Well, after that, because Duff's got 1.7 million followers.
Yeah, I retweeted his thing, too.
Well, and it just, all of a sudden, from all around the world.
I love it.
And what everybody was saying was not, you know, here's a guy named Scott. Nice. Civility amongst disagreement in a public discourse. What a concept. Another person told Duff, you're even cooler than the last tweet. Truth at the heart of scholarly debate from both of you. Someone else, that's the respect more people in this country should have at each other. Disagreement shouldn't end friendships. Take note, world. And went on and on. And I thought, how odd that just being nice and civil to each other with friends suddenly becomes this notable thing where everybody, I mean, he had.
Well, have you checked social media lately?
Well,
do you know what goes on over there?
I guess not. I mean, because I don't engage haters at all, and I certainly don't validate people. But just as you and I can disagree on, you know, a billion things.
Exactly.
And then,
I consider you one of my dearest friends.
Exactly.
I mean, I get it often. I get people say, how do you guys do it? And it's because I respect you and I think of you as a great friend.
I can disagree with anybody and have zero residual effect as long as the underlying, you know, basis of it is friendship and trust and all of that. And I was thinking, because Duff got, you know, 765 likes, 38 people retweeted what he said. And I thought, really? Is it that notable that a couple of buddies said, hey, I disagree with you. I disagree with you. Okay, well, we disagree with each other. And all of a sudden, I'm getting messages from Brazil and China. And I mean, it was weird.
I think we are absolutely at a time and place where any sort of gestures of, hey, we can be different and still see value in each other and respect each other. Yes, we are all craving that.
Just weird that is not the norm. And there were a bunch of comments to his that, you know, said that, you know, for most people, if someone disagrees with them, it ends their friendship. I just thought, how stupid is that?
Oh, yeah. At the very least, I mean, people will, you know, delete you from their accounts or not invite you to their family dinner.
Anyway, it was just, it was really fun to, you know, to wake up at 4 a.m. and then grab my phone at 6 a.m. And I see literally people from all around the world, and all because a friend of mine and I said, I disagree with you, buddy, but we're still friends.
Well, I think he went out and made the point to say, hey, you know, he had your back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, he didn't want his 1.7 million coming after me either, so... So the other thing is, when they do finish this tour, Duff's going to come in. We're going to fix all the traffic in the city. We've already planned that out.
The only problem is every time he ends a tour, they start a new one.
I know. Well, who can blame him?
We try so hard.
They've been the top grossing band in the world for 3 straight years now since they got back together.
Yeah, we try to set dates, and often they get moved.
Yeah.
As busy as he is, though, and as you know, and he's got this global thing going on, he clearly loves Seattle.
Oh yeah, yeah. He's, you know, building a home here again. He grew up here. He went to Roosevelt, and he and I are about the same age. So anyway, it's all crazy.
He's my favorite rock star.
Yeah, I think he's probably mine too. He's the only one I know. Okay, next up in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead, Dory Monson Show exclusive.
You may recall several months ago, we exclusively brought you the story about a woman who was trying to sell her house, and there was a guy who just terrorized her for weeks and weeks and weeks. He would come to her house. He would put a tent in the backyard. She had never met this guy in her life. It was a nice neighborhood. I'm not going to say which neighborhood because we didn't identify it at the time, for the sake of her neighbors, because they were all feeling terrorized by this guy too. But this guy would put a tent in her backyard. They have reason to believe he broke into the house. He'd go to an open house and he would sign in using his real name. And they have reason to believe that he left windows unlatched so he could break into the house that night. And on it went. The police were doing nothing. And that's when the woman reached out to our show. And after we shone a light on her situation and the police in action, then SPD started to respond, finally. And so her brother was going to be a vigilante. He was ready to, with buddies, to go after the stalker, the guy who was stalking his sister. And I had the brother on the show too.
And today we're going to flip the script on him and we're going to terrorize him. So that's where we're going with it.
And that made me really nervous because I was afraid that this woman's brother would end up in prison if they went after the squatter / terror guy. And so I tried to talk the brother. His name was Brian. I tried to talk him off the ledge because I didn't want him going to jail. And I understand he wanted to defend his sister. I understand that. It's a good brother. But finally, we have closure to that story months and months and months later. Lisa got hold of us today. The squatter went. They finally arrested him. And his punishment for terrorizing this woman and her neighbors, for squatting, for all of the things he did, 24 hours in jail and 30 days community service. That's it. That's how we punish people in Seattle these days, apparently. That you can terrorize a family for weeks and weeks and weeks, make their life a living hell, and then you get a slap on the wrist. And people wonder why we have the worst property crime of any major city in the United States of America. It's because we don't punish the criminals. This is the place to be if you want to get away with crime. But I was just outraged when I heard that this guy only got 30 days in jail. So we'll talk to the owner of that house, Lisa, coming up at 1:30 this afternoon, and she will tell the rest of the story with us. Next up in The Big Lead.
The Big Lead, top trending.
I saw a story last night on Cairo 7, our news partners there. Amy Clancy is the reporter on the story. The University of Washington Huskies, they are playing for the Pac-12 championship tonight against Utah, 5 o'clock game. Their star running back, Miles Gaskin, he had one thing that he wanted to do before he went off to the Pac-12 championship game. And I'm just going to play you the entire story from Amy Clancy because it's beautiful. It's a beautifully done story by Amy, but much more importantly, it is a beautiful heart of Miles Gaskin, the Husky running back, that was revealed in this story.
This was a night a local family of Husky fans will never forget. On Wednesday evening, UW star running back Miles Gaskin visited the Seattle home of Trina and Scott Cristiani.
So they're going to win the game for us Friday, Trina.
Trina is dying of brain cancer, so family and friends are gathering as her end-of-life care begins.
I was thinking of what could I do to make this lighter, so dark time. And I remembered that, you know, we've always cheered on Gaskin because he's from Linwood.
This is the woman's husband, Scott, and, you know, he's watching his wife, who just a young woman, just in the end stages of life, And they thought, well, let's reach out to Miles Gaskin. He's our favorite Husky.
We're from Edmonds, Linwood. Trina had always said, if I could meet a Husky, I'd want to meet him. He's our guy.
So early Monday, Scott posted on Facebook that his wife never misses a game. Miles Gaskin is one of her favorites of all time. Yesterday, Scott heard from number 9. The number 1 Husky running back of all time.
Yesterday at about 11:30, I got a message. Can I come at 4:30? Yes, you can.
Trina, a lifelong Husky fan, has had brain cancer for 12 years, but is getting near the end of her battle. Scott thought Gaskin might visit after the Pac-12 championship game. Never imagined he and teammate Race Porter would take time the night before flying to California.
Do you think he has any idea what his visit meant to you?
Yes, I do. Because I think he's an outstanding young man. And I think that they both saw an opportunity to bless somebody in a time of need. And they both said, I'm going to jump on that opportunity because I think they're game changers on and off the field.
Scott told Cairo 7 Trina's memory is gone, but she knew who was by her bedside.
They made her feel really special. And they made us feel special.
And it's so beautiful in the story because Trina, at one point in her bedside, in the very end stages of terminal brain cancer, at one point in the story, she flashes a thumbs up, which is just so cool. It's a visual that I had to make sure you heard about because it was just beautiful.
This was a time of healing. Her last wish was to see Miles Gaskin, but I believe that as much as she wanted that for herself, she wanted it even more for everyone else. That allowed us all to come together around her one last time.
In Seattle, Amy Clancy.
From the darkness comes a light.
For Cairo 7 News.
And man, I will tell you, I've never seen Steve Rabel. I've known Steve for a long time. I've never seen Steve Rabel cry before. But Rabes and Monique Minglavin, the two anchors, when they came out of that story.
Oof. It's power of what a life changer, a game changer can be.
He's a good young man.
Yeah. It's quite a story.
You can see more photos of that special visit and leave a comment for the Cristiani family by going to Cairo 7's Facebook page.
Wow. I mean, that just, what a beautiful story and what a beautiful young man, Miles Gaskin. When you're watching that Husky Pac-12 championship tonight, that's another reason to root for that guy. What a cool, cool gesture. That is your big lead for today.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Ursula's going to check the news, and then our weekly visit with Seahawks coach Pete Carroll is coming up next here on the Dory Monson Show.
This is the Pete Carroll Show.
All right, here we go.
On Cairo Radio 97.3 FM, where the 12s hear the Hawks. The Pete Carroll Show is presented by Les Schwab and Bellevue Rare Coins. Now with Seahawks head coach Pete Carroll, here's Dory Monson.
Well, it has been seemingly forever since I talked to this guy, but with the game on the horizon on Sunday, Seahawks coach Pete Carroll joins us. Hey, coach, great to talk to you today.
What's up, Dory?
It has been a while. We didn't talk last week because of Thanksgiving. You had a Thursday game the week before. I've missed you.
So much has happened since then. Yes.
Well, let's review a little bit of what's happened because you guys are just in a markedly better place than you were 3 weeks ago when we last talked, and that game in Carolina, man, that was really fun. That was really cool to see.
Yeah. The last 2 weeks have been really fun challenges for us, and to come through and finish so well and. Have our act together at the end of the games to put them away is really, really special.
And some of the things in that game, it's been really interesting to watch the evolution of Chris Carson. And, when he puts together just one play, like the flip where he lands on all fours, that I'd never seen anything like that before. Had you?
No, not quite like that. That was a really, it was a great moment, you know, because everybody knew they just saw something they'd never seen before.
Yeah.
And it helped us, you know, make some yards and all that, too. So it was really cool.
Yeah, it was. And Russell Wilson just seemed like, you know, we've talked all season about some ups and downs, but man, that looked like a complete game.
Yeah, the offense was really strong. You know, they had five scoring drives in a row at the end of the game. We needed every one of them. We needed every inch of it, and they did a great job coming through, and some really big plays in there and some really poised execution.
So you guys sitting at 6-5 right now. Does that sound about right for the kind of team you're coaching up every single day?
Heck no. No, I'm totally not happy with that. And you know, we've given too many opportunities away at this point, so now we're really on it. And for us, it's like playoff time. Every game is championship, and we got to go for it and give it everything we have and see if we can, you know, stack some wins up together here and do something special with this year.
I heard a former coach earlier this week, Pete, say that this is a part of the season where we know what every team is. That, you know, and obviously after 2 weeks, your team has evolved incredibly from where you were two games into the season. At what point does your team kind of fully take form? At what point do you have the team that you think you're going to have the rest of the way?
Well, I think that changes from year to year. You know, we've had all kinds of seasons here that would tell you that, but I think it's really obvious to us what we're trying to get done and how we're trying to play. That happened probably 4 or 5 weeks ago. We were clear about it, and so we've stayed with that same formula. Interestingly, last week when the running the ball wasn't as available, we had to balance it out and throw the football, and we were able to do that. That's why we're a balanced attack for that very reason. But I think we kind of found ourselves a while back. You know, just a couple games got away, we'd have a pretty good run here going. The Chargers Rams back to back was both those games we could have won. And we were right there in them, and they kind of make it seem like we're just on a little burst here. But I think we've been playing well for about 6 weeks now. You know, and seven weeks now, and I like the way we're playing. I like what we're going for, and how we're going about it. And so in this season, you know, we had kind of a reckoning, you know, that we turned it around. We're running the football. We know what we're trying to get done. But I don't think we're really going to know till we look back and the season's over. I always want to do it that way.
It's funny you mentioned that because I was just saying, there are a lot of people, myself included, that think this has been one of your best coaching jobs. And I know better than to ask you that because I know.
I appreciate that.
I know what your answer would be. Your answer would be there's long ways to go, and we'll talk at the end of the season to see about that. But since you just phrased it the way you did, can you just talk a little bit about the unique challenges of this season? Because I do think that, you know, the way this team has evolved has been really fascinating to watch just from kind of a leadership standpoint.
Well, we really did have to find ourselves, you know, and it took a month, 5 weeks into the season to really start to get a feel, and then when we started to establish it, we could tell, you know. So that was frustrating early, and then it's been really exciting to see us just change it and turn it. And really, week three you could tell, week four you could tell, but you know, we hadn't done enough to really call it, but. We put ourselves in motion. We went 7 weeks in a row with all those numbers and all that. That's enough to give you your formula, and it's been really clear. So that's been exciting to see that. Also, you know, proud of the fact that we have found it because, you know, it's not everybody does. And now we have a chance here with 5 weeks of the season left to go ahead and do something with it, you know. And so it's been really a fun year. It's been this team has been great to coach. They've been so upbeat and so positive and so willing to do whatever we can think of doing to get better and to get right. That's really rewarding. I just wish they'd had a couple more wins in there just so that we'd be ahead of it better than this. But, you know, then we're going to have to earn it. There's been a lot of seasons here, Dory, where we've run the last part of the season five or six games in a row, and it's given us a year that we forget these moments when you were struggling, you know, and you leave them behind you. So we'll see what happens in a month from now, but we'll – it's been a blast, and I'm holding really good thoughts for our ability to do something good with this year.
I've never asked you this question before. You just inspired a thought in me. There are a lot of people who think momentum is nonsense, and there are a lot of people who think it's very real. Where are you on the? Because you guys got in that run at the end of 15, and you know, hopefully you're on a similar run now. But do you believe in momentum?
Well, yeah, I believe in what. the success breeds. It breeds the confidence, you know, and the knowing who you are and what you're all about. And so I don't know if that's momentum as much as it's kind of finding who you are and understanding your identity. You know, that's what's so powerful. When you know what you're capable of, it's really clear. And now we got to go recreate it week after week. That's really the great challenge I'm always looking for and trying to see if we can put that together. So, but there does come with the successes. There does come momentum, and you know, when we play teams now, they know that we're going to run the football, and then when we can go out and do that, then it, you know, that does give you another elevated boost, you know, of who you are and what you're all about. And so that's I think you can establish a confidence about you that really, I guess, would look like momentum when you look back.
Okay, got it. Okay, now comes the really challenging part of the interview for me, Pete, because I like to ask you stuff that you haven't heard a million times. And you must be getting sick and tired of talking about Richard Sherman this week. Are you sick of talking about that?
No. It just depends how many questions you ask. But I'm okay about it. I don't care.
I mean, I know you get why there's such intense interest. And I'm just fascinated because I listened to your Wednesday press conference a couple days ago. And you're so gracious when you talk about people who, you know, and people think that Richard, and I think it's true, that he took shots at you. He took shots at the organization. And you always seem like you're confident enough in yourself that you don't really care what people say about you. But your number one rule is protect the team. And does that rankle you when there are shots at the organization on the way out?
You know, like you already evaluated it. I don't really care. You know, I don't care what they say. You know, I mean, the guys say what they have to say because they're in their world. You know, particularly when they're leaving, and you know, whatever they come to. You know, I mean, like anybody else. You know, you don't like people saying bad things about you, but I don't really feel that's really what's happened. I think guys are just, you know, they're stating their opinion on the way out and trying to justify, you know, their next step that they're making, and they do whatever they got to do. And I'm not going to worry about that. So it doesn't affect me and all that. But, I would like to think that when guys leave here, they're grateful for the time because they were treated well and we handled their situation as the best we could and all that. But it doesn't always come across like that to them. And so, you know, whatever comes out. So that's why I don't mind you asking the questions because it doesn't bother me one way or the other.
and one of the things you said was, in total, when you look at the totality of his time here, you said every bit was worth it, and that's with the benefit of hindsight, and you won a Super Bowl, you went to another. Is that a constant evaluation thing for you with everybody? I mean, is there a cost versus benefit thing with every single player on the roster for you?
No, I wouldn't make that evaluation of it based on winning a Super Bowl or not winning a Super Bowl. Yeah. It's the time that you spend competing and battling and trying to find your best and, you know, and figuring out the problems and adjusting to the growth and the expansion of the young guys when they're learning, you know, they're finding their career, they're finding their paychecks for some, they're finding their wives and their kids, and there's a lot of stuff going on. And there's a lot of growth opportunity and opportunity for expansion. And that being part of that is really the part that I think is the most rewarding. The winning and the losing things, that's okay, there's a lot of factors in there, you know, any one guy doing that or not doing that. So they're just part of the experience. And so that's why I see it a little bit differently maybe than you know, how many games we won, or it's a burden to take care of a guy or look after a guy. If the guy's too much of a problem, he ain't going to be here.
Right.
You know, and that's it. And eventually, you know, you have to figure that out.
Do you expect that you'll talk pregame?
I don't know. If I see him, yeah, of course I will.
Okay.
I got no problem.
Give me something on the 49ers here because, you know, they've had a lot of injuries. I know that they have not played up to their preseason expectations, but what kind of challenge are they for you on Sunday?
Well, this is a team that's more talented than their record. You know, the problem for their season is minus 17 turnovers, you know.
Yeah.
When you're in that situation, you can't win games. And so it doesn't really matter, you know, how stylish your players are. If that's the outcome, it just that mars everything. So I think they're minus 22 in their 9 losses, you know. And so that's really, really hard to deal with. And so that's the story of their years, as I would look at it. So when we play them, the day we play them, they're talented and they can run and they're physical. They got a good front. They got a really, really good scheme on offense, a great play caller. They've got a committed running game. So they've got a lot of aspects. If on this day they take care of the ball and play a good solid football game, they're going to be as hard as anybody. So that's how we're preparing. We're preparing for their very best, and they're going to play great, and we're going to have to play great to, you know, to do what we do. So that's how we see it. And they've got some, the running back is really good. The receivers and the tight end are really good. And so there's problems on both sides of the ball for us.
And how are you health-wise? I know KJ Wright is out, but 2 days before game time, any other problems?
There's a couple guys here, you know, that are going to challenge us all the way up to game time. KJ is in a routine he's doing to see if we can get him healthy for the next weeks to come. Trey Madden's banged up a little bit. We'll see where he is. It's going to be hard for him to make it back. We'll see. A couple guys got to run in pregame to see where they are also. So, no definitives at this point. Everything's going to go to game time.
Got it. All right. Four of the last five at home. And since you just defined momentum for me, let's see if we can keep this thing going here. This is going to be a fun home stretch of the season.
All right, Drew. We're really looking forward to it and looking forward to, you know, the place was crazy last time we were there with the Packs, and we're looking to rile them all up again, have a blast.
All right. Coach, we'll talk to you next week. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care, Drew. See ya.
Seahawk coach Pete Carroll, he joins us every Friday afternoon. And did you hear some of the stuff that Richard Sherman was saying this week? I'm going to play that for you. And you going to cheer for the man when he comes out on the field on Sunday? Talk about that. Lots more straight ahead. The Dory Monson Show marches on. Thank you to Pete Carroll for just coming on with us. Seahawks take on the 49ers Sunday. You'll hear it right here on your home of the Seahawks, 97.3 Cairo FM. I'm curious, when Richard Sherman comes out of that tunnel in a 49er uniform, you going to be cheering for the man? I mean, he was part of, you know, the greatest success that the Seahawks have ever had. But, man, I tell you, he was again this week in the press conference. He was taking shots. They talked about the excellence of Russell Wilson, and Richard Sherman says,
"You've seen through the years what Russell is capable of doing."
Yeah, I've also seen him throw five picks in a game, so you know you see what he's capable of on both sides of it. So you understand that he can be defended. So you go out there and give your team the best shot.
So yeah, a reporter says that you've seen the excellence of Russell, and Sherm's response. I mean, clearly, Sherman cannot stand Russell Wilson.
That's Sherm. He did that when he was here.
I know, but when he was here, you can kind of swallow it, possibly. But that's just
not the last couple of years.
Yeah, well, he made it very hard to be lovable.
He was just a poisonous character the last couple of years. Yeah. And, you know, he tried to kick Jim Moore and get his press credentials stripped and all of that. And I just think the team is so much better off without Richard Sherman, and he's still really good friends with Doug Baldwin. Baldwin, in the Times yesterday, said that he thought it was crappy the way the team treated Sherman on his way out of town. So they are still friends, but clearly Richard Sherman does not have much affection for Russell Wilson.
Richard, what is your relationship with Russell?
I don't really have a relationship with Russell. We were teammates. We played during a very special time for the franchise.
And one of the comments that Sherman made in that Sports Illustrated article, where he talked about how Russell Wilson is given preferential treatment by the coaches and by the organization.
Everything I've had to say about him and that whole situation, I've already said. We've obviously, it was a good time for the team. It was a good time for the organization. They didn't handle some things like I felt like they should have. Other guys felt like they should have, but, you know, it is what it is at this point.
And Russell Wilson, people were trying to stir it up this week, but Russell Wilson is tough to draw into a verbal fight.
Obviously, Sherm is as good as it gets at corner. He can make a lot of plays. You got to know where he is, understand that, and got a lot of respect for how he plays the game, how intelligent he is.
Yeah, Russell Wilson wouldn't say anything negative about him. So how about you? Whether you're watching on TV or at the stadium, will you be cheering for Richard Sherman? He was part of the greatest run in Seahawks history. Online Trading Academy text line, 98973. Let me know what you think. 98973. Fastest 15 is next.